So before we begin, before we get into the whole application and the grant process, I wanted to make sure that everybody had a good sense of the definitions that I'm talking about, just so that way everybody's on the same page. I know sometimes different organizations and different federal agencies have different definitions, so I wanted to make sure that we're all clear on that and that we're all on the same page. So if you start with slide number 2, talking about what a homeless veteran is. A homeless veteran in the sense of the VA is someone who lacks a fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence, or who has a residence that includes shelters, individuals living on the street, temporary residences that aren't meant to be for human habitation, and anything else that may, public or private place, you know, under bridges, unparked benches, those types of things. The things that are not included in this are if you have an individual who is living on or staying with a mother on their couch or a brother or sister on a couch or a friend, those people are not considered homeless under the definition of the Veterans Affairs and under most federal agencies. So keep that in mind as you're moving through is that in order to be eligible for funding under this program, they must be a homeless veteran, and that means that they have to be homeless at the time of entering into the facility. Some of the reasons why veterans are homeless, typically they're twice as likely to be homeless because of the fact that they have had some sort of instances where they have combat-related injuries, disabilities, post-traumatic stress disorder, whatever it may be, things that have been exacerbated by their military service. All of these things can lead to the ultimate result of an individual being homeless. Also, homeless veterans tend to have lacked the family and social networks due to lengthy periods away from their communities of origin. This really means they've kind of burned all their bridges. They don't have the family supports. Once they return from their military service, be it, you know, today in the current times or back when they return from Vietnam or any of the other previous conflicts, they don't really have the connections and feel that they're united or have the support that they once had. And this can lead to them feeling isolated and not have any support. So it's really important that you take all of these things into consideration when you're developing and implementing a program, because if they're lacking those and it's leading to some of the problems that they're having, it should be something that your organization is able to provide is a holistic, well-rounded atmosphere that can serve the whole entire veteran, not just the fact that you're giving them a place to sleep and eat. We're talking about serving not just their physical needs but their mental needs as well. And, of course, we all know that government money is limited, and typically only 1 in 5 of veterans are served under those funds. And as more individuals return and as the economy tends to go as it is, services are going to become in greater need, and veterans are going to have a greater need when it comes to health care and mental and just general health care. Some of the general services that veterans need are coordinated efforts to secure housing and nutritional meals, something that ties them together. So it's not just a place where they sleep. It's a community atmosphere where they have housing, and then they may go down and eat together as either a group, a unit, a floor, something that will unite them together and make them feel as part of a community. Essential health care, either provided from the VA or a community clinic. Substance abuse, aftercare, and mental health counseling, these are all vital because just because you treat the veteran for one issue, you're going to have to treat the veteran for all of the issues that they're dealing with, be it substance abuse, traumatic stress disorder, whatever it may be. All of those things must be addressed in order to help a veteran become integrated back into society. Once again, we're talking about personal development, empowerment, be that through life skills, you know, social encounters, whatever it may be that your organization feels that it would be beneficial to these veterans are vital to providing those within your program. And, of course, job assessment, training and placement assistance. Once a veteran is ready and able to work, making sure that they're going to have a successful outcome is key within your program design. Now, one of the things and one of the programs that is available to organizations serving veterans is the Homeless Providers Grant and Per Diem Program. This grant program is offered through the VA, the Department of Veterans Affairs, and they provide grants and per diem payments to help nonprofit organizations establish and operate supportive housing and/or service centers for homeless veterans. The two key things here are supportive services and housing. Supportive services are all of those things I talked about before, your health care, your case management, your life skills, employment training, all of those things. And housing is, of course, their housing needs. So it's pairing those two together. You can't have one without the other. The grant and per diem program encompasses both of those. The program has been around since 1994, and the VA has awarded approximately 10,000 beds, and there are about 4,100 new beds in development in all 50 states across the country. It is a competitive grant. You compete not only locally, but you compete nationally against other programs in other states. So it is a fairly competitive process. They typically have twice as many applications for the programs that they end up funding. So you want to make sure that you state your need and your target population and all of those things very, very clearly within your application in order to be scored as high as possible. There are two different levels of funding, the grant component and the per diem component. And we're going to go into those in just a few minutes. The overall goal of the program is to help homeless veterans, who we talked about that definition a few minutes ago. There's three goals of the program, and everything you do within your application, program design-wise and objectives, should tie back to these goals. That includes these three goals, which means achieve residential stability. Are they able to leave the program and have somewhere safe and secure to live? You're going to increase their levels and or income. If they're able to and are wanting to work, this would where that would fall into. And for those who do not necessarily are able to work, but are you able to increase their training opportunities so that way they could either work part-time or have some sort of social activities within the community. And then, of course, the third goal is to obtain greater self-determination. So when you look at these goals, you're serving the whole entire veteran from their housing to their mental health and to their levels of income and their ability to survive within the community. And as I mentioned, all of these goals should be reflected in your program design and are how the program's success will be rated within the application. Some of the key factors of the program is that what happens is you're going to apply for a certain number of beds in your application. At least 75% of those beds must be specific for veterans. That means if you have 100 beds, at least 75 of those beds must have veterans in those. And the other 25% can be for other individuals, but at least 75% of those must be occupied by veterans. The other flip side of that is that you can only receive per diem for veterans in that program. So as we go back to the same analogy of 100 beds, you have 75 veterans. The VA will pay for those 75 veterans on a per diem basis, but the other 25 the VA will not pay for because they are not veterans. This includes dependent children and spouses of veterans. You're going to have to figure out how you're going to pay for those programs, but they will not be covered underneath the VA. The maximum daily rate that you're able to get from the VA is around $34. It's about $34.40. This includes payment for your services and housing. So what's going to happen is the VA is going to determine all of the service costs that you're providing to these veterans, figure out what the total cost of that per day per veteran, take out any other funds that you may get from other organizations or other programs, and that will be the portion that the VA will pay. And that portion will not exceed $34.40. The service limit, this is for transitional housing, which is limited to up to 24 months. VA is not able to fund permanent housing. That means if you are looking to develop and create a permanent housing program, you cannot do it with funds from the VA. You have to use another funding source. VA funds are for only transitional housing, and there is no exceptions for that. It's a law of the program. Okay. Eligibility for this program, as I mentioned, it's eligible costs. Transitional housing for up to 24 months with supportive services. So you're getting paid to provide housing and services. On occasion, the VA will pay for supportive service centers for homeless veterans not in conjunction with housing. However, I haven't seen one of those grants for the past 4 or 5 years. So if funding does become available, it will be called a service center grant, but in most instances, they do not offer funding for that. The third eligible area of funding is to purchase vans, and once again, that would fall underneath the capital portion of the grant. In order to receive federal funding, you must be a nonprofit, a 501c3, a 501c19, and you must have the determination letter from the IRS, meaning you have to have the letter when you send in your application, otherwise you will not be eligible. Just because you've sent in your information to get approved, you have to have the official letter or you're not going to be funded. You're not eligible. Veteran service organizations, state and local governments, and Indian tribal governments are all eligible funding sources. So your organization must fall into one of these four categories in order to receive any type of federal funding, not just VA funding, but any federal funding that would be available. Okay, so we're going to talk about the first group of the VA funding, which is the capital grants. Capital grants are funds given to organizations for the creation of new facilities or new components of existing ones through acquisition, construction, and renovation. The VA will provide 65% of the funding for the project. So capital funds pay for your building. They pay for you. A good example of this would be you're in a city and there's a lot that you want to purchase and then you want to build a building on. The VA would pay 65% of the acquisition and construction costs of that project. Now, the thing you want to keep in mind here is that your total project is what they're going to pay 65% of. So you're going to find out how much your acquisition costs and you're going to find out how much your construction costs. Add those two together. And those are your total cost, and that is what you would ask the VA to match 65% of their funds for. Another example would be you want to purchase a building, and it needs to have some renovation that goes on in it. So your total cost would include the cost of the building plus the cost of the renovations. So the VA will pay for 65%. The other 35% must come from non-federal dollars. And if you have more questions on that, I can go through that. But just know that you have to have the 35% before your project will be officially awarded. The second portion is the per diem. And once your building is up and running and you've passed inspection, you'll get per diem payments, which pay for operating costs of your supportive housing and your supportive services. So capital pays for your construction of the building. Per diem pays for the operating costs. As I mentioned before, per diem is about $34.40 per veteran per bed. And what happens is once you've passed inspection, the VA will come in. They'll determine what your daily rate is, and that is what you'll be eligible to charge to the VA on a per-day basis. Now, key things to keep in mind here is that you have to have a veteran enrolled in the program on that day in order to receive the funds. So if you are asking for a 10-bed program and in a month's time you only have 3 of those beds full, you can only ask for the services that you offered. So you wouldn't be able to recoup all the 10 costs because you didn't have 10 people within your program. You can only charge for the individuals that are actually enrolled in your housing and supportive services program. Okay, I'm going to stop here. Are there any questions on what I've covered so far? Does anybody need any clarification on what I've covered?
Okay, I had a question.
Okay.
This is Denise. Now, it was a little noisy. It's because I'm in the office, and I couldn't print this to go to the other room. You said they only pay for 24 months.
Yes.
Per veteran?
Yes.
Now, what happens with the building part of it since they pay for 65% acquisition, for the grant for the capital assets, what happens then at the end of the 24 months? Do they take that back?
Well, the veterans would move on to another program, and you would just re-enroll veterans into your program.
Oh, another set. It's like having, say, I got a 10-bed facility. It's like having 10 waiting.
Or, right, as soon as someone leaves, you would enroll someone else into your program.
Oh, is that something I would have to apply for, or would the veterans have a list, of a waiting list for them to come in?
Well, that would be something that you would have to decide on within your organization, how you're going to outreach and get veterans.
Okay, okay. Because I was the one asked the question the other day, you know, that if you don't have your letter, then there's no reason to really apply right now.
That's correct.
So I'm getting an understanding of it so that I can make sure, because you don't know when this will become available again, do you?
It's usually offered once a year, but there's no guarantee, and beyond that, I don't know.
Okay, okay, that's okay. Well, at least I'm getting the information I need so that I can be well ready to do it. So that was one of my questions, and I think I heard you when you said you have to have the other 35% of the money. You know, $100, you got to have $100,000, you got to have $35,000 ready when this goes up, right? It's like you got to have your 35.
That's correct. When you submit the application.
When you submit the application. Okay, great. That part of it I got. I think those were my two questions for now.
Okay. Were there any other questions?
Yeah, I have a clarification question.
Sure.
You had said, I think you had said that in terms of the daily rate, that the VA will come into the program, work with the agency to determine that rate. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Deborah Dahl, another question with regards to that per diem rate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you got grant funds to help you with services, to increase your supportive services, was it my understanding that the VA will subtract that from per diem amount?
What happens is... And let me backtrack just a little bit here to point this out, is that if you receive capital grants and you're applying for capital funding, within the application there's a checkbox that says, I would like to receive per diem. Once you check that box, you'll automatically be eligible to receive per diem. You don't have to apply for anything else. So the thought here is if the VA is going to build a project, they want to be able to operate it as well. So I should have said that before. So if you're applying for capital funds, and you're going to want to get per diem, which most programs do, just make sure you check that box off within the application. And once your project is up and built, they'll do an inspection, and at that point in time, they'll come in and kind of this is kind of a real summary, high-level explanation of this. There's a form and a chart and everything that they go through. But what they will do is they will list all of the services that you will be providing.
I had
okay, hold on just a second. Let me finish this. They're going to list all of the services that you're providing, and then they'll put a cost next to the service. So they're going to find out how much it costs each day for that. Now, if you're getting some additional funds from another source, sometimes they'll discount that because they don't want to double pay for something. And so there's a whole formula for that. That's, like I said, the real quick explanation of that. They will explain all of that to you when they give you the information. But basically it comes down to they don't want to double pay, or they don't want to pay for something that another organization or group is already paying for.
Okay, so potentially it could be higher than the $34.30 depending on what level of services you're providing.
No, the maximum that you can get is $34.
Okay.
So keep in mind that in most organizations, $34 is not the total cost. It's much higher than that. So they bring in other foundations or other groups to offset the cost. And so the reality of the situation is even if they take off some of those discounts, the most that you're going to be able to get is $34. So even if they say, okay, well, the cost of services is $50, they're only going to be able to give you $34.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Now, who else had a question?
My question now, I got this off a computer. My page number we're on is page...
we're getting ready to start on page 13.
We're on 13. Okay.
All right. Is everybody good to go for me to start on the actual application?
Yes, I am.
Yes.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about the actual application and the process that goes on within the application. So if you look at slide 13, this is a real brief overview of the application process from announcement to when the awards are actually given.
Okay.
The NOFA will be announced within the Federal Register. And once that is announced, you can go down. What the NOFA is a Notice of Funding Availability, and it provides guidance on the rules and regulations of the grant, how much money is available for what types of services. As I, like I mentioned before, there's capital and there's per diem, so it'll tell you exactly, you know, there's $15 million for capital grants. That'll be very specific, and it'll be listed within that NOFA. It'll also give you any funding limits that may be included, as well as the due date of the application. It'll also provide a link to the application that you can download and save, and that's what you're going to submit. Now, two ways that you can find this is if you do, I would encourage you to go to our website, nchv.org, and you can sign up to get our newsletter. Anytime that we have announcements on federal funding as well as just general information and resources, we will send that out on our listserv. We also do post it on our website. The VA will also post it on our website, but if you sign up for our listservs, we'll send out an announcement once that does come out. The first thing you're going to want to do is once you read through that NOFA and determine that, yes, you are interested, is to download the instructions in the application package. This is the actual information in the forms that you're going to be filling out and sending within, sending back to the VA. Most important thing that I can tell you is that you're going to want to read and reread those instructions. Most of the answers that you're looking for can be found in two places, the NOFA or in the instructions, general instructions application, which is Section A that you're going to download. The general information and instructions will give you information on, you know, size of font, when you how you attach information, how you go about putting MOUs in there, forms and appendices, all of that information will be included there. Your first submission is where you're going to have all of the information about your project design, how you're going to serve veterans, any target populations that you may have, and how you're going to help a veteran from the moment he walks in, he or she walks into your program to when he leaves successfully in your program, that where all of that is going to be included in the first submission. If you look at slide 16 here, you see a good explanation or a good example of the grant format. So it's a question and answer period section here. So here you see the question, how did you identify the need for the project? And then you see the space for it. That's the amount of space that you have to fill in the answer. The space doesn't get bigger or smaller. It stays that amount of size, and you have to fit your answer into that space. So unlike other federal grants, this application is one that you fill in, you print hard copies of them, and you send into the VA. So keep in mind that this is something that, you know, if you really want to craft your words here, in particular, and pay attention to how much space you're using for each one of these questions. The key here is you only want to answer the question that they're asking. Don't go into more detail on another topic. Just make sure you answer the question that they're asked. So when they ask you, how did you identify the need for this project? That's what you want to answer. You don't want to talk about how many you're going to serve. You don't want to talk about, you know, the specific target population. You want to know, they want to know specifically, how did you figure out who you were going to serve within this? So keep that in mind, and as you move through the application, it's vital that you are cognizant of all of the different space requirements and those that are involved with this application. Once you, as I mentioned before, on slide 17, the general information gives you the basics of the application, formatting requirements, how to do tables and materials in the appendices, and how your application will be reviewed and scored. As I mentioned, any question you have about the actual application would be, the answers would be here. If you have questions about awarding amounts, general allowable costs, those would come through the NOFA itself. Once you complete the application, you're going to send it in to the Grant and Per Diem office, which is located in Florida. Typically, they have a due date in the middle of the week at around 4 p.m. My suggestion is always send it away FedEx, UPS, where you can get a verification that it has been delivered so that there is not an issue. But it has to be there within those deadlines or it will not be deemed eligible. Once the office gets it and it's in the allowable time, it goes through what is called a threshold review. each application will be looked at to make sure that all of the information is complete. Did you sign all of the forms? Did you include all the pages? Are all of the things there that you need to have for the application? For the capital grant and for the per diem grant, there is a checklist included within all of the materials. The easiest thing to do is to look through that checklist and make sure you have all of those forms on that in order to make sure your application is complete. If your application is missing materials, you will not be moved on and scored by the panel. You will be you will be deemed ineligible and your application will not be reviewed. It will be denied based on the threshold review. So the threshold review just makes sure that your application is complete. Once it gets approved for that, it's going to go through a panel review. Panel review includes individuals read 3 to 5 times through your application and give it a score, and it's scored based on the numbers in that NOFA, in that general instructions, as we talked about before. And a total number will be given to, of those 3 to 5 individuals, will be given to your application. When all of the applications have been read, the total scores will be posted from highest to lowest, and money will be awarded from the highest to lowest until all of the funds have been given out. In the instance of a capital NOFA, once that happens, you will be asked to submit the second submission, and this is where you'll have to show, if you did not before, your site control, your match funding, all of the documentation, pictures, land plans, construction, all of those types of materials. Those will have to be done within the second submission, which is usually 30 to 60 days after the due date. Awards are typically listed 120 days after the due date, and once you have been awarded is when you can start drawing the funds down. But you have to keep in mind that you can only draw funds from when you were awarded. So if you get funds awarded September 1st, if you spent money on the project in August, those wouldn't be eligible because you didn't receive the award until September. Anything you spend on that project September on could be included. Two key pieces also to remember are that anything you include in your application, goals, objectives, services that you're going to be provided are going to be what you're held eligible to. So make sure that when you fill out that information that those goals and objectives are attainable. The second key is that whatever you put in your budget is what you're going to be held to. There is no, I forgot to put this in. No, what you're going to have is whatever you've asked for is what they're going to give you. There is no modifications allowable for that. If you are not, and if you don't receive a grant, you can ask for a grant review. This will give you a good idea of where you can improve, and then if you decide to apply in additional rounds of funding, you'll know where you need to improve. Some of the strengths of applications are the needs assessments, making sure that you use your challenge data, and I'll go over that in just a few minutes in regards to what challenge is, but making sure that you use your challenge data and use that to plan your actual program design, clearly defining your goals and objectives, making sure that they break down and are tied back to those three overall objectives of the program, and making sure that you are able to obtain them. It's probably not very realistic to say that you're going to have 100% of the people enrolled in your program attend, for instance, a life skills class. Not everybody in your program may need that, so it may be more realistic to say we're going to have 75% of those individuals attend that class. Because if you say 100%, everybody's going to have to go to that class, and there is no leeway there. So it doesn't necessarily mean you have to have the highest percentages. They just need to be realistic for your program and things that you're going to be able to achieve. Because if you're not able to get those on a continuous basis, the VA is going to come in and not going to give you the funds until you're able to reach those goals. If you're able to secure your matching funds at the time your application is submitted, you'll get leveraging points for that. And what I mean by that is if you have a letter from another funder that says, we will provide the 35% match if the VA funds this project. That's a matching letter because they have committed if the VA gives the funds. So that is something that if you can get to include that in. keep in mind that if you get conditionally selected, you're going to have to show that within 30 to 60 days, if not shorter. There isn't a lot of time for that second submission for you to come up with that 35%. So it's really vital that you have that before you submit the application. Of course, coordination with other programs in your community. For the woman who asked about how do we get these veterans, well, the thought is you're going to be working with your local VA. If you haven't already, it's vital that you start working with them now. The person you're going to want to work with is the Homeless Veterans Service Coordinator.
Okay.
And or the the Grant Per Diem Liaison. And those individuals at your local medical centers, they work with veterans who are homeless or going to be homeless, and they can provide referrals. Now, it's also important to find out who else in your community is serving, either homeless groups or homeless individuals, because veterans make up a big portion of that group, and they would be able to provide referrals to you as well. But the VA wants to make sure that you're incorporated in that you're working with other groups in the area, because if another organization is providing a service better than you may be able to because you're a smaller group, you want to tap into that resource instead of duplicating it in your program. So it's vital to see what else is being offered and how you can augment some of the services you're offering within your program and within your community. And, of course, reaching out for technical assistance if you're having any difficulty. I'd be glad to answer any questions that you may have either on this call or for the next week or so. You come up with questions, feel free. Email is probably the best way to get me, and my contact information is on the last slide here. But I am try to get back to you on a relatively quick basis with an answer. So I am going to be out of the office doing some training, but if you send me an email, I'll get back to you as soon as I possibly can. I mentioned before the challenge, which is the Community Homeless Assessment Local Education and Network Group, which is the survey that the VA does every year on the needs of homeless veterans. It's conducted at their local medical centers, and all of the information is compiled up into a vision sheet. So I would encourage you to download the report and see what the greatest needs of the homeless veterans are in your area, as well as how many were there, because it may give you a good idea of they had a pretty good or they had a very high number of women veterans, or they had a very good percentage of men with dependent children or whatever it may be. But that should be your template of where I should make the greatest strides in serving first. So download that report, take a look at it, and really look through and evaluate how you can make the biggest impact within those service needs. Kind of the next steps for your organization is to go ahead and download that grant application. There is a current NOFA that is available, and I'll go over that in just a minute. But the application doesn't usually change year to year. It's about the same. The only thing that does change is the funding limits and the funding types. So if you go ahead and download that application now, you'll have a good idea of what it will look like next year, and you can begin to start filling it out so you have an idea of where you need to improve or how some of the areas that need to be covered so you're ready to go when that does come out again. Once again, assess the needs of your community and select your target population. Where is the greatest need, and how can your organization fill that need? And then once again, subscribe to the NCHV listserv. We'll be happy to send any information that we have on resources, grants, anything that would be available in reference to homeless veterans to you via our listserv, and that will be the way it goes. And you can do that on our website. Now, I mentioned the current NOFA that's available right at this point in time. There is $15 million available for capital costs for new or expanding programs only, and vans are included. Now, vans also have the 35% match, so you can get 65% of the cost for a van, but you do have to come up with a 35% match. The due date for this application is March 25th, 2009, at 4 p.m. to that Tampa office. They are looking to fund around 1,000 beds in 35 programs, and there are three funding priorities with a certain women with dependent children, tribal governments, and the general population. So there are funding priorities here, but if you don't fall into the top two, you can always apply for the general population grant that is available for that. My contact information is there on slide 24. Like I said, email is probably the best way to get me for the next week or so, as I am going to be out on travel. But I'd also be happy to answer any questions that anyone may have at this point in time.
Deborah Dahl, Golden Sierra Life Skills. I have another question.
Go ahead.
The challenge community, the community assessment, where would we go to get that information for our area?
It's on the VA's website, which is va.gov. If you scroll, if you scroll down to the right-hand side at the bottom of the page, it says Homeless Veterans. You'll click on that. On the left-hand side, it says Challenge Report, and you'll be able to download it right there. We'll also include a link when we send you the recording and notes from this call.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Melanie?
Yes.
You said that the contact person at the VA would be a case manager for homeless veterans?
The homeless service coordinator, yes.
Homeless
veteran
service
coordinator.
Okay. And I think I had one more question. Say, for instance, if the property has already been purchased, can you still apply?
Well, what are you looking to do with the property?
Okay, like, say, for instance, if you purchase a property for a home and you apply, does the property have to be up for purchase at the time that you apply? Say, for instance, at my say I have a building. And I want to do this for homeless vets. The price of the building was $100,000. Does the VA still award the $65,000, or because it's already paid for, how does that work?
Yeah, if you've already purchased the building, then that would be a cost before the grant would be awarded. So, no, that would not be an eligible cost.
Okay, then, okay. I won't worry about buying the building. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That would be stupid on my part if I go pay $65,000 and then apply for the grant, knowing
right.
that the building's already paid for. I mean, it wouldn't make a lot of sense to me because that right there
right.
make me ineligible, right?
The cost would be, yes. You wouldn't be able to spend, or it wouldn't be an eligible cost until those funds were awarded to you.
Right. Until they were awarded to me. You mean that I would still be eligible even though I paid the money for the
no.
cost of the building?
No. Unless you bought the building after, once you get awarded, there will be a date that the award begins. So let's say it's September 1st. If
okay.
you buy the building after September 1st, then yes. As long as those costs were included in your budget, it would be an eligible cost.
Okay.
If you bought the building in July, you bought it before the grant started. It's not an eligible cost.
Okay. Okay. Because the reason I asked, because in my case, I think what's going to happen is that I have got to go through the whole process now. See, I got one thing I don't have yet is my 501c3 letter.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to go through the process. That gives me a little time to be ready for the next go round.
Mm-hmm.
See, I understand the program, and I've downloaded everything, and I'm going to study that, and accompanied by your notes, I should be doing pretty good with it.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, are there other questions? Does anybody need any clarification or another further explanation of?
Had a pretty easy job today.
Okay, well, I don't want to keep anybody. If there aren't any more questions, like I said, I'd be happy to, if you go home and think about this and come up with, oh, I forgot to ask about this, just shoot me an email and I'll try to get back to you as soon as I can. We also have some materials on our website. Christina will be sending out a link to the audio version of this call and any notes and links for the actual we'll send a link out with the challenge report as well, but you can also download it from the VA. But I'd be happy to answer any questions in the next week or so, and I wish everyone the best of luck, and I'll be cognizant of your time, and unless somebody thought of something real quick, I'll let everybody have a good rest of their afternoon.
Thank you so very much,
mm-hmm.
Melanie.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Melanie.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.